Chester. This is NHPR, New Hampshire Public Radio.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Supermarkets in New Hampshire are in the midst of a super shakeup, with some players struggling, others thriving, while new suitors are just beginning to court Granite State shoppers. The big news recently was of trouble at two major grocery chains, with Shaw's announcing it would close six of its state stores, and then soon after, Stop and Shop said it was completely pulling out of New Hampshire. These back-to-back announcements were terrible news for workers, of course, with anywhere from 700 to 1,000 losing their jobs. And it was disappointing to loyal customers who get attached to certain supermarkets. But many analysts say the overall environment for Granite State food shoppers just keeps getting better. There are a lot more choices than a decade ago, with department stores like Target and Walmart expanding their food offerings, along with drugstores, dollar discount chains, and a proliferation of locally focused vendors. Meanwhile, some traditional supermarkets have found their respective niches and are growing, and there are a few brand new entrants to New Hampshire, with more possibly on the way. Today in The Exchange, where the grass is greener for Granite State grocers and where the gray areas are. Let's hear from you. What's your take on the supermarket shakeup we're seeing in New Hampshire, these newer players, and the struggles of some established chains? What do you think it means for workers, shoppers, and our economy? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us for the hour. Joining us from the Chicago area is Jim Hertel, managing partner of Willard Bishop, a food retailing consultant. And Jim, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Also with us, Kathleen Callahan, assistant editor for New Hampshire Business Review. She's been following the closures of New Hampshire supermarkets and other grocery-related issues. Kathleen, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Also with us, John Dumas, president and CEO of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. And John, a big welcome back and good to see you too.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well, and John, I'll turn to you first, but I want to hear from everybody. The Nashua Telegraph perhaps put it best, saying 2013 could be the year of the great supermarket shakeup. What do you think, John?
Well, it is a changing environment. Certainly, it's something that's very dynamic about our industry. It's constantly changing. And if you go back to the 1970s, and there was a substantial shakeup when A&P and Grand Union were the large leaders in the state. And now they're not here at all. So it's a cynical situation that happens on a regular basis where we see some players coming in and out as the models change.
So we've been here before.
Oh, I have, absolutely. And it's a very dynamic industry. It keeps changing and will keep changing.
Now, I'm interested in what you said, as the models change. Can you just change? Can you touch on that a little bit,
sure,
John, and then we'll go into it later.
Sure. But as you know, the traditional model of a supermarket is an all-encompassing store. It has all the departments, does everything all in one place. And that's been very much focused for the last 30 years or so. Unfortunately, that's changing now a little bit. There's a polarization that's happening. There's a lot of new players like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods that are going to the high end and are satisfying that market, and there's quite a demand for that at this point. At the same time, people are concerned about their economies, not only whether they're going to have the jobs, but how much money they have disposable income to spend on food. So they're going to the lower end, the dollar stores. It started out with the Walmart, and now it's even less than that with the dollar stores out there. So you see that polarization happening, and the one in the middle is the traditional supermarket, which is what we're discussing today.
So the nichification, if I can call
Absolutely.
It that. And where do the people who try to serve all comers fit in that?
Well, they have to keep looking at what the customer base wants. And that's always been the case with the grocery store, is that they survive by satisfying their customers. And if they do a good job of it, then they have some very loyal customer base that's with them for a long period of time through the good and bad times. If they're not, then they have to, you know, relieve some of those stores from the market area. The two big players that we see happening now, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, are great companies. Both of them are doing a great job. They just not be able to handle it all in New Hampshire the way they've done in the past. So they're closing some of those stores, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'd love your thoughts, too, on this, Jim. Again, you're in the Chicago area. You're a national consultant. What do you think about this shakeout that we're seeing here in New Hampshire?
Well, I think what you're seeing in New Hampshire is just a microcosm of what we've seen across the country. John's exactly right. You're seeing growth on the top end. The top 20% of households are doing pretty well and enjoy fresh food, and there are a lot of people there who are willing to cater to that end of the marketplace. And there's an increasing number of people who are really looking to economize on food, and no shortage of options, emerging options for them as well. And so you're seeing exactly that happening in New Hampshire, and it's just mirroring exactly what we're seeing across the country.
And was there anything specifically, Jim, that, you know, these stores or other sort of traditional grocers who haven't found that niche, is there anything specifically that you as a consultant would say they did wrong? I mean, was it the rewards cards? Was it the way they marketed themselves? Was it the pricing? Was there any sort of one or two things that they did wrong, or are they just sort of victims of a rapidly changing marketplace?
It's a little bit of both. I think that there were tea leaves that could have been read maybe a little bit more sharply than they were, and reactions could have been a little bit quicker. If we take the really long view, there are a lot of traditional supermarket operators that 15 or 20 years ago didn't think that they were competing with Walmart for grocery sales. You may not have a lot of Walmart supercenters up in New Hampshire, but in other parts in the country, especially in the Southeast and Southwest, there's a lot of Walmarts. And food retailers didn't think that people were actually going to shop there. And it wasn't until Walmart, on a national basis, was probably the fourth or fifth largest food retailer, grocer in the country, that supermarkets really sat up and took notice. So I think it's a combination of a model where they were always thinking of the other traditional supermarket as their prime competitor, and not reacting quickly enough when they started to realize that shoppers were starting to make purchases in other stores besides themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talk a lot about legacy airlines, and now here we are talking about legacy grocery stores. Kathleen, as a business reporter, mm-hmm. watching these trends here in New Hampshire, what are you especially looking at these days?
I'm just looking at the growth in the different kinds of stores that are coming into the state, like you touched on. For example, there's Walmart, which has been expanding a bit in the state with its grocery sections. All the Targets in New Hampshire now have grocery sections, and they even have some fresh produce, not a huge selection.
But it's there if you just need a couple things.
It is there.
Yeah.
I see bananas there sometimes.
Right.
Like they said, there are drug stores selling groceries, club stores, Costco. And there are, bargain stores like Ocean State Job Lot is making a push into New Hampshire now. And they have actually a very good selection of dry goods. So is Dollar General and other dollar stores. And we're also seeing some new brands that have just come into the state for the first time. Trader Joe's jumped up the road from Massachusetts into Nashua last year, and it also opened another location on the seacoast. And that's something that people are really clamoring for. There's a new Fresh Market in Bedford. And Aldi, it's a small German chain, recently opened in Salem, and they're looking at potentially opening another one in Plastow. So you just see a lot of new competitors coming into the market, so obviously there's something here for them. New Hampshire, a lot of people here do very well. We have one of the highest median incomes in the country. There's a good mass of population down in the southern part of the state, and that's where a lot of these retailers are locating there. So I think, that all feeds back into why we're seeing increased competition in the grocery space and why the middle-of-the-road grocers are really starting to get squeezed.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about new entrants, all of you. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. The number on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we are looking at the shakeup in New Hampshire's supermarket industry, and we want to hear from you. What's your take on all these changes that we've been seeing here in New Hampshire? These newer players coming in that Kathleen mentioned, the struggles of some established chains that we've talked about. What do you think it means for food shoppers? How about our broader economy? And what about the workers who worked at some of these stores that have been downsized or closed? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And to this idea of all these new entrants coming in, John Dumas, that Kathleen mentioned. You know, it's often said that grocery is a razor-thin profit margin. You and I have talked about this before. If that's the case, why are all these other folks bothering to get into this industry if the profits are so small?
Well, again, the industry lives on a half of 1% net profit to 1% net profit on a traditional basis. The reason they do that is that they can survive because they do a lot of volume. And the more volume you can do, then you can work on pennies rather than needing dollars. So it's a draw for a lot of other businesses as well. We believe that it's an anchor for a lot of the shopping centers in the state. You need that grocery store to draw the business to that. And I think that's what Walmart found out. That's what Target found out and others have been, that they can capture a portion of that market and bring those customers into their business more often. So that's important. And the other thing you have to remember about New Hampshire is that 40% of all of our customers live out of state. We have those cross-border sales.
40%. It's that much. Wow.
It's substantial. It's been that way for at least 30, 50 years out there. And so that's why we can afford to have more food stores in New Hampshire than other states, because we have a larger customer base that goes beyond our own. And so we have also a lot of independent operators doing the same type of thing. And also you have to remember that the independent operators are under the same pressure that the supermarkets are under. We have traditionally seen a 25% turnover of ownership in the small independent operators, so we're concerned for them as well.
Independent operators mean like
mom-and-pop stores,
the food co-op Hanover or Concord?
Yeah. Country stores, neighborhood stores, just the traditional independent operator type stores.
Right. So let's not forget about them.
Exactly.
Real quick, what do you think, Jim? If it's food isn't a big money maker, why are CVS and Target even interested in selling food?
They're interested in it because it brings people in. Folks will go grocery shopping probably 8 times a month at some store or other to buy products that are typically sold in a supermarket. And they may go into a Target store once every 4 or 6 weeks if it doesn't have food. So the idea is really to bring food, and you don't have to make a lot of money at it if you're getting people to come in even 1 or 2 more times during that period of time.
Just getting those feet in the door. Let me invite our listeners to join us after a super short break, and then we'll talk some more. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And coming up, your calls, emails, questions, comments about what's been happening in New Hampshire's supermarket industry lately. 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. What's going on this week at NHPR? Well, an easy way for you to find out when you sign up for our e-newsletter this week at NHPR. You'll find out what the exchange, word of mouth, and our newsroom are planning for the week. Also, get a behind-the-scenes look at the station. Click on the Connect menu to sign up for our e-newsletter at nhpr.org. Partly to mostly sunny around New Hampshire today. High temperatures will be in the 80s. It'll be partly cloudy tonight. Areas of fog after midnight. Tonight's lows in the 50s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing evaluations and surgical interventions for athletic injuries, sosmed.org. And the Music Hall of Portsmouth presenting the latest project from Woody Allen, Blue Jasmine, beginning August 23rd and running through September 12th. Tickets at themusichall.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at New Hampshire's recent supermarket shuffle with the closings of some major chains and new entrants coming into the market. 1-800-892-6477. What's your take on some of the changes that we're seeing here in the Granite State? These newer players, the struggles of some established chains. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And before we go to our listeners, just a couple more things I wanted to ask all of you about. And John, to you first, there's been a lot written about the strength of the local food movement here in New Hampshire. Very strong here, including all the farmers markets, the CSAs, the co-ops. We now have winter farmers markets. What impact are they having on traditional or legacy grocery stores?
Well, again, that's another competitor coming in. It's drawing some product away. I don't think we're concerned that's going to make or break a food store. We're concerned probably more in that area about the food safety to the consumer. As you know, every food store in New Hampshire is licensed and inspected on a regular basis for the integrity of the product that they have in there. So they can only accept inspected and food products in their stores, whereas farmers markets, they don't do that necessarily. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, except that it's not the protection that we believe the consumer needs to have.
Although a lot of the grocery stores have been inviting, encouraging sure. local farmers to participate.
Absolutely. A lot of them allow the in there and are even promoting that. And that's great. That's great for a lot of purposes, local transportation issues, and having fresher product available at probably a more reasonable price. So we hope that continues.
Let's take some calls, all of you, and then I have a lot more questions. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Dan's calling from Concord. Hi, Dan. You're first on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, Laura. I live in Concord, and on Fort Eddy Road, there are three major supermarkets all within one block of each other.
Yeah.
And it's always perplexed me how they manage to all stay in business, particularly since Market Basket, and I'm not an employee of the company or anything, but consistently they have the best prices. And I just wonder how that manages. I mean, if you think of a gas station and those three gas stations on adjoining corners, eventually their prices come down to be nearly similar.
Right. You look across the street and they're all pretty much the same to the penny, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, Dan, this is a great question, and I have to say one that other people who have visited me here in Concord have also said, why are all your grocery stores in the same place? How do they decide, Jim Hertel, about where to situate themselves?
Well, typically what they'll do is they'll look at things like the neighborhood demographics, how many households, where is the growth likely to be coming from, and they'll do traffic studies to understand how many cars pass by. And all of that data gets fed into models that will help them understand what people are likely to be spending, how much they're likely to be spending, and what the size of grocery store that the neighborhood requires or can support. I will point out that one of the outcomes to Dan's question, clearly there are people who are pulling out of the marketplace, and some of that may be in reaction to Market Basket coming in. So it certainly isn't an infinite ability for people to be able to compete with price operators.
Well, and the people who live in the north end of town, Jim, and in the south end of town, and I hear these complaints all the time, they say, why are they all in the same place? You know, we have to drive 5-10 miles to go to the grocery store. So for people who don't live in that core area, it's kind of annoying.
I certainly understand that, and it probably, just given the dynamics of the food industry, the retail food industry, would suggest to me that there could be an opportunity that somebody would be locating stores on the north end of town, because that certainly would represent an opportunity.
You know, I want to ask about the differentiation among these three stores, and these are the biggies in New Hampshire, although there are certainly others. And Kathleen, one way that Shaw's tried to differentiate itself was with these loyalty cards. So the blueberries cost $3, but if you've got your card, they only cost $2. How did that go for Shaw's? Because a couple weeks back, they said, nah, we're not going to do that anymore.
Right. Well, I guess it wasn't doing very well, which is why they decided to get rid of it. And Stop and Shop also had the loyalty card. I used to work at Shaw's when I was in high school for 3 or 4 years. Yep. And I would just feel terrible for people that came in and they didn't have a discount card and they would pay full price for these sales, you know, these items that were supposed to be on sale. Market Basket, you know, which has been moving really aggressively into New Hampshire, they've just always marketed themselves as a really value retailer. More for your dollar is their tagline. And they basically write off the rewards cards as being a gimmick. They just believe in giving everyone the same low price all the time instead of making you have this rewards card. And then on the flip side of it, there are some people who just don't like having a rewards card in general. There's some people who, you know, kind of privacy activists who don't like their purchases to be tracked.
Especially in New Hampshire.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not surprised that Shaw's got rid of it. The company that acquired Shaw's at the beginning of the year, Cerebras Capital Management, they had actually done the same thing with Albertson's Market, which they had bought in 2006. They got rid of the rewards card. And Shaw's has also dropped its prices. And, you know, that's a function of Market Basket moving in here with its lower prices. And Hannaford has, too. And these stores are trying to adapt to the changing environment and trying to make themselves more competitive. There's different things that they're doing. to try to bring customers in. Hannaford Market, you know, I think has a pretty good natural food selection. They have the Guiding Stars program, which tells, you know, which foods are healthy in the store. They provide product information, recipes. So they are trying to differentiate themselves in addition to lowering their prices. And so, you know, what happens is that consumers really end up being the winners as these grocery stores compete.
Well, and John, I do wonder if, you know, the public is getting rewards card fatigue, if I could put it that way. I mean, every time you turn around, someone says, do you have a rewards card? I mean, my wallet is overflowing with these things. Did that backfire?
Well, I think it's a transition you see over the years. I mean, I can remember back when I had my grocery store, we had charge accounts, and we had people paying on a monthly basis for charge accounts.
So you used to run a grocery
store. That's 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, you know, we got into checks, and then we got into electronic cards, debit cards, credit cards. So it's a transition of everything happening. And I think what we saw with the loyalty program, that it was a way to get further information about the consumer, about what their needs were, and try and address it on an individual level. And that worked for a while. But again, it's so proliferated now with every gas station, every pharmacy, everybody's doing it, that people are getting tired of that and they're saying, why don't I just get the lower price?
Yeah, can I just come in and buy my stuff?
Exactly.
And not have to rifle through my wallet.
It's just a transition that happens, and we don't know yet what the next big movement's going to be. That's going to be a fad for a while and then go out. But again, the food industry being so competitive, we're going to always be on top of that.
Yeah, you always have to find something. That's interesting. Any hints, Jim, about what the next big fad might be now that we're sort of done with loyalty cards?
Well, I still think that loyalty cards have got – I'm not quite the pessimist on it that a lot of people are and don't necessarily read so much into the Shaw's the dropping of the card that the fad has gone by. But I will say probably the hottest thing that's going right now, and I haven't heard discussion of it in New Hampshire yet, is with the gas programs, which are sometimes linked to loyalty cards and sometimes not. And every time the price of gas goes up another dime, those programs get to be much, much more popular and much higher profile.
Yeah, John, go ahead.
Well, they were tried for a while. Shaw's had a commitment with a local petroleum dealer to have a gas rewards program. You buy at Shaw's and you get discounts on your gas. Again, that's faded out a little bit. What we're seeing now, that there's a comeback coming with the convenience store chains doing a lot of that. They have their own rewards programs to discount the gas.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation, folks, someone who has been watching with concern these closures that we're talking about. Joining us now on the phone is Charlie Sherman, Executive Director of New Horizons, an emergency shelter, soup kitchen, and food pantry in Manchester. And Charlie Sherman, a big welcome to you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you folks this morning.
So grocery stores are often major donors to area nonprofits. How does this affect you, Charlie? How does a Shaw's or Shop and Save closing down affect your organization?
It affects us in a number of ways. One primarily is a lot of the dated product that's normally on store shelves that has to come off is oftentimes donated to food pantries, and then we distribute it to the clients who come to us looking for product. The other way, and this is really a concern that we've started to think about here at New Horizons, is of course, in Manchester, all the Stop and Shops are closing, as well as the Shaw's, and much of the food that we receive comes from Hannaford supermarkets. They've been wonderful. There are biggest donor. I can't say enough about what Hannaford's does for us. The other chain's not as great as Hannaford's as far as donation of product, but I'm a little concerned that folks who shop presently at Hannaford's, at Stop and Shop and at Shaw's here in Manchester, many of them will go to Hannaford's, buy some of that product that would otherwise end up on the shelves of the food pantry.
Wow.
So inventory control will become a little tighter for Hannaford's, and that could reduce the amount of product that Hannaford's in the long run would end up to a place like New Horizons. The other concern, you're talking 600 to 900 people who will be out of work right here in the city of Manchester. Many of those people will be coming to New Horizons looking for help in our food pantry, and that's a big concern because, again, it becomes a case of supply and demand, and at some point, we're already at the stage. I had a board meeting last night where what do you do? At what point, you know, as it is, food donations are down 30% this year. What do you do when at some point you just say, we can't handle it anymore?
Wow, so a double hit for you there, Charlie.
Yeah,
the grocery store donations down as these stores close. And as from what I understand, Stop and Shop was very generous.
Very much. And then
600 to 900 people out of work, and some of them might be coming to you for help. Wow, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a real concern. And, you know, we've been very fortunate. We do fairly well in fundraising. We have a lot of generous donors. But at some point, like I said, when the numbers just get to be beyond your control, beyond what you can handle, do you start to look at cutting back on services? And that's a real concern of mine, because it's the last thing we want to do. But if we're forced to, at some point you have to start to look at, where do you cut?
So what are your hopes, Charlie, for this empty real estate now in Manchester? Lots of empty grocery store fronts. Are you hoping that it'll fill up quickly with yet another grocery store or some other type of person? Or
that seems to be the hope. I've had conversations with the mayor, and I know he's out aggressively recruiting other supermarket chains to come to Manchester. We recently heard in the news that Whole Foods is making an entry into Nashua, where one of the Market Basket stores was consolidated. So it seems that there are chains out there, whether it's something like Price Chopper or Wegmans, or I'm becoming an expert now in supermarket chains that I've never
right.
heard of. So I know the mayor is aggressively out there trying to get somebody to fill these vacant spaces for so many different reasons. One, for to create jobs in the city of Manchester, which would ease the burden on us a little bit. But also, the community needs supermarkets. It needs competition. It needs a supermarket that cares about the community. So there are so many different variables in all of this. And at this point, it's all negative. And hopefully we can turn it all around and make it into a positive.
Well, Charlie, thanks a lot and good luck.
Thank you very much. And if I can just make a pitch out there for anybody who's listening, we're in a challenging situation right now, and any help that somebody might be provide us to help us get through this tough time is certainly appreciated.
All right. Charlie, thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Charlie Sherman, Executive Director of New Horizons, an emergency shelter, soup kitchen, and food pantry in Manchester, talking about what the closure of these grocery stores means for him and the Queen City especially. John Dumas, you want to jump in?
Well, I just wanted to say that Charlie certainly has a substantial volume of concern where he is. But it's throughout the entire state. The food pantries, there's over 400 of them throughout the entire state that are in the same predicament to some degree. And, of course, there's the New Hampshire Food Bank is there to help supplement that. What Charlie mentioned earlier about the inventory controls, the grocers, again, being more sophisticated than they were in the past, they have more computer control, they're able to not have as much spoilage. They can determine by the weather how much they're going to be selling this weekend and anticipate a closer inventory control so they have less spoilage. So that helps the stores a little bit stay profitable, but it also puts a lot of pressure on food pantries and the food bank to try and accommodate that, because, as Charlie mentioned, a lot of that product used to go to those opportunities.
There's less waste than everything
exactly.
is tracked very precisely.
And so that becomes more of a problem all the way through.
You know, it's interesting what he said about a supermarket that cares about the community. And here's a question for you, Jim, and maybe you too, Kathleen. What about store image? I mean, not just what it looks like and whether you like the food they offer, but its corporate profile, how much it gives to the local community, how it treats its workers, sort of the buzz about the store's corporate culture. What do you think, Jim? How much does this affect the way people decide where to shop, especially those people who are going to have to be making a switch now?
You know, I think it's one of those attributes or qualities that breaks a lot of ties. I think the caller before asked about how does somebody compete when the prices are all headed to the bottom. And the reality is there are a lot of different ways that retailers can compete, and being part of the community is a tremendously important aspect of it. There's a chain in Florida called Publix that some people may have heard about that is an extremely responsible corporate citizen, a member, good member of the community, and also employee-owned. So there are literally thousands of employees who are shareholders. They have a very satisfied, happy workforce, and they've got a tremendous business and are able to compete with a lot of price-oriented competition and do it without giving away literally the store, no pun intended.
What do you think, Kathleen? Does this matter?
Oh, yeah, definitely a grocery store's reputation does matter. I think, you know, people look at Market Basket, you know, it has a certain cachet. You know, it's family-owned despite the fact that they have a lot of family rifts and that have been very public over the years. You know, a lot of their employees are happy. They have profit-sharing programs. And then you look at a store like Trader Joe's, which has just amassed a crazy cult following. When that comes to town, people are so excited. They make pilgrimages to go there. and I think we've mentioned a few times Wegmans. It's based in New York, I believe. And they're just making a push into Massachusetts now. So it's possible that we'll see them coming to New Hampshire in the coming years. And they have, you know, they're well known for treating their employees really well and being a pleasant place to shop. So, yeah, I think that can have a big impact on where people want to spend their dollars. They want to, you know, support businesses that treat their people well and that, you know, have an impact in their communities.
All right. Well, I might ask you a little bit more about that whole cult following that certain stores have, but let's get our listeners back in. The number 1-800-892-6477. Vicki's waiting in New Boston. Hey, Vicki, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. I basically just thought that I would share the fact that I had lived in Keene and Jaffrey and Peterborough and New Boston and noticed a significant shift of demographics over the years to different, you know, areas, and noticed a tremendous shift towards, you know, natural foods and organic foods, of course, as the whole country has. And what I have seen in the different grocery stores in the different regions is, you know, they really need to keep up with the times, and especially with, like, fresh produce, like you were saying, with the farmers markets. I mean, if that's where people are heading, stores like, you know, Market Basket have not had very good success with, like, the fresh produce and having it be organic or having it be fresh looking, or, you know, that's just not – the whole natural food thing has not been particularly – in that store as abundantly as Hannaford's and Shaw's. Just, you know, everywhere I've lived, it seems Shaw's prices have been, you know, through the roof for everything, yet they haven't been looking at their demographic and seeing what do people want. And I think that Hannaford's has succeeded because they have managed to see what people want. And that's pretty much just my comment.
Sure,
and
Vicki, thanks a lot.
Whole Foods and Trader Joe's have succeeded in that aspect.
Yeah, and the talks gets back to that whole niche issue that we talked about, where customers are going, and not all customers are going in the same direction. So thanks a lot for that call, Vicki. We'll take more of your calls after a super short break, so stay with us.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the dangers of texting while driving, then what the law says about what we can and cannot wear. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly sunny with high temperatures in the 80s. It'll be partly cloudy tonight. Areas of fog developing after midnight, lows tonight in the 50s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Hillsborough House, a locally owned nursing facility improving the experience and delivery of rehab and residential care for over 50 years. Information at hillsboroughhouse.org. And New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits presenting its 2013 Leadership Summit titled All In, Honing Our Future, September 20th in Concord. Registration at nhnonprofits.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, join us as we sit down with Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas, talking about the many issues before his department, from Medicaid to mental health. Email us your questions for Commissioner Tumpas before the program, if you like, exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, the impact of grocery store closings and new entrants into the grocery market here in the Granite State. What's behind the big shakeout underway? You can join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. I want to ask all of you about one more thing that our last caller raised, and something that Kathleen said earlier. And here it is for you, I think, Jim Hartel. Why do people get so attached to where they shop for groceries? Kathleen talked about, you know, the cult following that Trader Joe's has. I have a friend who used to work for a local newspaper. He says the biggest reaction he ever got to a story, ever, was one he did where he compared Shaw's, Hannaford's, and Market Basket. Why do people care so much about this, Jim? At some point, you know, you're buying flour and bananas.
Well, I think you are to a degree, but the caller also mentioned produce, and produce and meat. People have a very close relationship with food broadly, and when it's produce or meat or other random weight fresh products that they're buying directly from, you know, typically from a service person in the store, what ends up happening is the combination of service and the combination of the quality of the product that they're buying, their ability to pick out exactly what they want, it does become a very personal kind of relationship. And I think that in combination, especially with some of the more successful operators, they'll know their shoppers by name. And there is a much more of a personal and I would say a human interaction between the shopper and the store than you find in a lot of different stores. And that really does create an awful lot of loyalty and passion.
What do you think about this, John? You've been in the business for a long time.
Absolutely true. It's always been about customer service and customer recognition for what their needs are. And I think that's what they tried to do with the loyalty program, is to get closer to understanding what each individual customer needed. But again, that human touch makes a big difference. When the cashier can call you by name, when the store manager greets you when you come into the shopping center, that makes a big difference all the way through.
All right, let's take some more calls. And Susan's waiting in Londonderry. Hi, Susan. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was recently in Missouri and in New Jersey, and I saw a supermarket chain, Aldi, A-L-D-I. Mm-hmm. And I understand it's a German-owned company. They have limited square footage. They have limited products in the sense that they don't have every brand that's available. And they have also, they keep their staff at a relatively small number. And I'm wondering whether your panel had ever heard of them.
And Susan, did you like that smaller feel, even though you didn't have every product under the sun?
Well, I'll tell you what I sort of had the impression when I heard about it was that they might have been something like a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods, but with limited numbers of stuff. But when I walked into the store, the first thing that I saw were chips and cookies. And that's not the impression I want to make when I walk into a store with, let's say, my granddaughter. So I wouldn't necessarily go there. I just wondered whether the panel had heard of it and whether it's something that might come to New Hampshire.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the question. Aldi's, I think everybody wants to jump in. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Well, actually, Aldi is in New Hampshire. It came to Salem last year.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yep. And they're apparently eyeing a second location potentially in Plastow. Aldi is what you might call an experiential grocer. It's kind of, you know, it's a little different than shopping at your traditional supermarket. Like you said, they don't have maybe as many employees working there. It's a smaller format store. And they offer generic brands at up to 40% off other prices. So it might be a bit of a shock if you go in there and you're used to shopping at Shaw's or Hannaford. You don't see the brands that you're used to buying. But it's kind of neat. And I think they have this thing where you put in a quarter. You have to put a deposit down to get your shopping carriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you put your carriage back, then you get your quarter deposit back. And that's just one of the ways that they're cutting back on the labor.
Actually, Aldi's is doing very well in this country. They put a warehouse in Connecticut. They've got stores all the way down to Florida at this point. It is a German company, and it's very similar to another concept that you might have seen somewhere around called Save-A-Lot. In fact, there was one in Berlin, New Hampshire for a long time, a Save-A-Lot store, and it's really no frills. That means that it's you don't have any baggage, brown bags on when you take it out. You have a cardboard box, or you take it out in your shopping cart. They cut down all the frills.
No deli or sushi bar.
No. And the other part is that since they are a German company, they import a lot of their products in here. So you won't find the national brands that we have here. But you'll find that they'll have some European brands that in some cases may be of a different quality, a better quality than what we have here.
Well, it's interesting. And, Jim, to you, it's sort of a counter to this megastore trend that we've seen. Here's an email from Peg in Bedford who says, at some point, supermarkets can be too big. I live in Bedford where there's a new market basket that, I swear, covers an acre. You need roller skates to get around it. So Aldi's maybe is tapping into that things have gotten too big feeling. What do you think, Jim?
You're absolutely right, and you know, we've talked a lot about niche operations and targeted types of stores. Aldi's a perfect example of that. It's about the size, for people who haven't been in it, it's about the size of a CVS store would be a way to think about it. A limited assortment, a limited selection of items, but the quality is actually quite good, and I know the Aldi people reasonably well, the ones here in the United States. And they certainly pay an awful lot of attention to getting the quality right, and they hold themselves to a pretty high standard. One of the things that the Aldi shoppers consistently point out about why they like it is not only the price, but also because they can get in, get out, and do maybe not their entire weekly shopping, but a good proportion of their weekly shopping, and do it in a much, much quicker fashion, just because the store is, like I said, about the size of a chain drugstore.
Wow. Well, again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Susan, thanks for that one. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And Peg, thanks for that email. Here's another one from Lori, who says, when I expressed to a manager type at Shaw's recently my disappointment at the closings of our favorite store, he commented that corporate stores with their pricing requirements have great difficulty competing with a family-owned store like Market Basket. Lori says, sad tale of our capitalist system. John Dumas, how much does ownership matter in terms of what you get and how much you pay?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with it. It depends on how much you want to get out of the profit of the business. Because working on a very slim profit margin means that we have a lot of very limited capital to buy more inventory, improve the store, go into new categories, et cetera. So when you have a stockholder-owned company that demands higher profits, the prices have to go up. And I think that we saw that recently with the Market Basket situation, that whether they were trying to recapitalize the stores to give more money to the stockholders, the concern was that the prices would start rising. So as long as you can keep the balance of the having enough equity in there to buy the merchandise you need and have the store that the consumer wants, at the same time satisfying the stockholder, you end up having a balance that can work for the store.
So you've got publicly held companies, in other words, stocks traded, right, and you need to satisfy your board of directors and mm-hmm. so forth and your shareholders. Privately held companies,
right,
family-owned companies,
and
all that
and
plays
employee-owned in. Employee-owned companies as well.
And employee-owned companies. Can you just, without going through a long list, John, tell us who's what here in New Hampshire? For example, Hannaford's.
Hannaford is a corporate-owned company owned by Delahaye's, which owns Food Lion stores. And so they're doing very well in this country because they realize how much they can pull out of that for profit for the stockholders and how much they need to put back into the stores for the consumer. So that's why they're bouncing out their situation very well.
That's a European
company. It is
company.
A European. Shaw's has had a lot of difficulty over the years because they've had a lot of turnover of ownership on a national scale for the last 5 years. It's been a lot of turnover. And so there's always been that concern about change in management, change in direction of the store, change in the model that they want to present to the consumer, and also the profit that they need to bring back to that. So for their reasons, they've had a little more economic difficulty than some. Market Basket, family-owned, they're debt-free. That gives them a great advantage in buying the product and then selling the product as well. So you have the blend of a lot of different ways of looking at it.
And what about the independent stores that you mentioned earlier?
Independents, again, this is their opportunity because they can know the consumer on a one-to-one basis when they come into the store. They can have the product there. They have a little bit more difficulty in getting capital from financial institutions to help them grow. But if they do a good enough job at it, they can satisfy the consumer and retain that and then grow their business on a small basis. So even the smallest mom-and-pop store can really have an advantage here over some of the larger chains.
Especially if they're in an underserved area and
exactly.
people can go there, maybe pay a little more, but they don't have to spend all that money on gas driving
exactly.
20 or 30 miles.
And they're smaller format stores so that you don't have to walk through the large store.
What do you think, Jim? I mean, I'm not going to ask you, you know, what's the best ownership model, but is there a model that seems to get grocery stores into trouble or seems to be successful that for them in terms of ownership?
I would say that the from my perspective anyway, the driving factor is the length of time that somebody wants to own the store. One of the beauties of a family-owned operation when the next generation was looking at taking over the business is that people were running this business, the supermarket chain, for 30 or 40 years kind of time horizon. We now have, I think Kathleen mentioned Cerberus earlier in the show, a private equity firm that has purchased a lot of super value properties, including Shaw's in your neck of the woods. And a lot of times private equity folks want to get their money in and get their profits back out in 3 to 5 years. And quite frankly, a lot of the things that probably need to be done in order to be able to make those retailers competitive as food retailers just can't happen in 3 to 5 years. So without saying one's better and one's worse, I think that you can say that people who are running a food retail operation for the long haul are probably going to make the investments that will make it a pleasant shopping experience and a thriving operation for years to come.
Here's another entrant to New Hampshire's grocery market that we haven't talked about yet, folks, but I'll throw it out there. Kathleen, what about Amazon, which now delivers groceries in a few big cities, so you don't even have to leave the house to get your shopping done? Has that even been looked at here in New Hampshire?
I'm not sure about locally so much, but this is definitely something that is happening. I think it's going to be happening more into the future. Hannaford actually is doing a pilot program, as I understand, in a couple of towns in New Hampshire where you can order your groceries online. You still have to go into the store to pick them up.
They won't deliver them.
They won't deliver them. And, you know, as Stop and Shop had Peapod, which did deliver groceries, and, you know, Stop and Shop is pulling out of New Hampshire now, so we don't really have that service. But, yeah, I think that's something, you know, that we're moving toward. You know, a lot of sales are moving online, so it kind of just naturally follows that people are going to buy groceries online, too. You know, where it's in New Hampshire, it's not as big of a, you know, deal because we have no sales tax. But people are looking online.
You can't look at the tomatoes, though. You can't see
which
ones are bruised and which ones. Right. What do you think, John?
Well, again, we talked about trends and what's new coming out of it. And certainly the online retailer rather than the brick and mortar stores is a significant future possibility. Again, I think that you'll find that in the long run that something like the fresh produce, the fresh meats, the deli will be something that will draw them back to the store to actually see the product. But it is going to be a convenience factor. As debit cards and credit cards have been there, have become a convenience factor over having cash, now you're going to have the same thing with online retailers. It's just growing phenomenally at this point, and it's something that every food store needs to be looking at and how they can accommodate.
Really? Every food store is going to have to go in this direction?
Well, they have to look at, online calling in, having it ready. I don't know that they're going to get back to home delivery as it was 50 years ago, but it certainly is. What are the convenience factors that we can offer the busy consumer today?
Yeah, as much as I like to look at the produce myself, there are weeks where it would be really nice to have someone else do that. Here's an interesting email that just came in. Donna in Derry. Thanks, Donna, for this. She says, I have a family of 7 and feel I can only afford to shop at Market Basket as the prices are markedly cheaper. However, my son has worked at Shaw's for the last 5 years during high school, during college breaks. Their loyalty toward him inspires me to make occasional trips into the more expensive Shaw's. Donna says, I am always surprised at the price difference between the two stores. Struggling families looking to save pennies cannot afford to be as choosy about their produce as those who shop at the more upscale grocery chains. And Donna, thanks a lot for that. And Jim, just your thoughts on some of the themes Donna raises there.
Well, I think she finds herself in the same situation that an awful lot of shoppers do today, which is to say that they have to make the food dollars stretch as far as they possibly can. Even though the last few years have been challenging from an economic standpoint, it seems like food inflation up until the last few months has really outpaced inflation in the rest of the economy. And so people are increasingly forced to economize and try to stretch that dollar as far as possible. That's why, you know, Aldi, the Save-A-Lot, and quite frankly, the Market Basket are all extremely popular these days as people are trying to economize, no question about it.
Well, Donna, thanks a lot for the email. And all of you, and maybe you first, Jim, what's next in this evolving picture? This has been real interesting. What do you expect for the next year that we're going to be hearing about in terms of more closures, new entrants, new trends, and so forth? What are your big thoughts there?
I think we're going to see a lot more challenges for traditional supermarkets, and especially the ones I think the Stop and Shop broadly is going to do just fine on a national basis. Kroger and Safeway will be able to continue to do well. I think we're going to see a lot of the 10, 15, and 20 store chains that are a little bit bigger than mom and pops, but certainly don't have the buying power that the large chains do. Folks like that are going to be extremely challenged, and I suspect we'll see more store closings of the traditional supermarkets that are operated by retailers of that size. And those sites may become Whole Foods, or they may become other large chain supermarkets, or they may become other kinds of retail formats in due time. But I think we'll see sell-offs and consolidations continue.
Yeah, and those big empty real estate spots, Kathleen, the towns are going to want something to come in into those big empty stores. Charlie Sherman talked about that.
Yep, because that is a big impact on their vacancy rates in the town, and it's going to be tough to fill 12 big locations that were built for supermarkets. Absolutely, it's going to be a drain.
Yeah, what do you think, John?
I think that you're absolutely correct. Everything that Jim said is absolutely correct. what we're looking at is that there's some of the existing competitors will be looking at those stores to say maybe there's a new opportunity for us to expand our operation into those areas to grow their business. There'll be a lot of from retailers from outside of New Hampshire area that will be also be looking to come into that. But I think the pressure will be there by the local townspeople to bring the anchor stores in, because the anchor store helps those shopping centers survive.
Right. If you own a small business next to that empty storefront,
exactly.
You're not happy about that.
Exactly.
All of you, thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks
thank
a
you
lot,
very
Laura.
Much.
Thanks.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and John Barrett. Our interns are Faith Meixel and Catherine Muzzy. Our executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we sit down with Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas. Whether it's the debate over expanding Medicaid or the struggle to improve mental health services, his department has seen its share of challenges lately, but did receive a bit of a boost in the last budget. We'll talk with the commissioner about all this and controversy over the state's Medicaid managed care plan. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 o'clock on NHPR, where we get support from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Woodstock Inn, Station, and Brewery. Proud to feature its new 170-seat function room for weddings and other special events. Details at WoodstockInnNH.com. And Wentworth Douglas Hospital, supporting healthy communities in the seacoast of New Hampshire and southern Maine, WDHospital.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. Werner Herzog is not a name one would associate with a public service campaign, but the filmmaker who made evocative pieces about Antarctica and a man living with grizzly bears has taken on a much different and equally haunting topic, texting while driving. And the public is paying attention. The film has now been viewed